Welcome back to the George Farmer podcast, marking a triumphant return after a hiatus of 2.5 years. I'm absolutely thrilled to be back in action, especially with the incredible company of my friend, David Norholm, a Danish biotope aquascaper and dedicated school teacher. Make sure to give David a follow on his inspiring YouTube and Instagram accounts. You'll find the links in the description below. This episode is a fascinating blend of topics ranging from David's stunning Rio Orinoco inspired biotope to discussions around emotional connections with animals, the intelligence of cichlids, unexpected mentions of Hitler, guppies, feline adventures in graveyards, integrating aquascaping into school curriculums, and much, much more. While we encountered some minor audio hiccups, they definitely won't detract you from your listening pleasure. For an enhanced experience, you can catch the 4K video version on YouTube. Feel free to drop your comments and suggestions there for future episodes. I make it a point to read through each one. Before we dive into our conversation, a heartfelt thank you for tuning in. I sincerely hope you find this show enjoyable. As a small request, if you fancy lending your support, consider leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Your feedback means the world to me.
This is going to be the launching episode of, resuming episode of my podcast.
Yeah.
Which the last episode was recorded about 30 months ago.
Yeah, I'm kind of flattered to be in there.
Well, you did comment on my, I did a YouTube community post and you said something, you look forward to it. And then I replied, I don't know if you've seen it yet. I said, well, do you fancy being on it?
Yeah.
And then obviously messaged you. We're in Denmark, of course. And yeah, it's just a great opportunity, David. And I really respect you as a fish keeper, you know, as a friend. And it just makes sense to resume it with you. So thank you.
It's my pleasure.
The aquarium's looking magnificent.
Thank you.
Angelfish still tiny, though.
Yeah.
We need to work on those, don't
you? Yeah, I need to. Probably due to my lack of eating, but
yeah. Yeah, maybe. But the other fish are fine, those cardinals.
Yeah.
Who you normally would say needed slightly warmer water are really juicy. Do you buy them that big or have they grown that big?
They have grown, yeah.
They've grown that big?
Yeah, okay. They were kind of some of the smallest one got eaten by the angels when they got in there together.
Okay.
And the hardiest ones survived. Some of them took the jump, and
yeah,
this is the one that's left.
Yeah. And it's still non-CO2 injection, isn't it? So you have to call it a low-tech tank.
Yeah, we can just, we can call it that.
Yeah, people like that. They like to label things low and high-tech.
Yeah.
As if, like, there's only two types of aquaria, you know. It's nuanced, though, isn't it? You've got quite strong lighting, you've got powerful filtration, you're doing regular water changes.
Yeah.
So it's not running the typical low-tech methodology.
No, the only thing not being high-tech is that I'm not having the CO2 around.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Swords are doing lovely.
I like them.
Yeah. Really, is this swords? A lot of red?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And there's a green in the middle and another ocelot. They're kind of getting taller than I expected.
Mine have just started to grow tall. I wonder if it's a seasonal thing.
Yeah. I would suggest I put it in as the middle plant, and there's some other echinodermes in the back, because I was supposing that they would grow taller, but the ocelots kind of just got the tallest. So
these diamond tetras are stunning.
They are really lovely.
Yeah. Like the Corydoras, what species are these?
They are called Loxosomus.
That's it. Yeah.
But it's, they all have this same Trillinatus Julie look.
Yes, they've just got more of a broader black stripe on the back and on the dorsal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And how long has it been running now?
Oh, it's probably early summer, so half a year or something.
Oh, yeah. You must have filmed it just after you set it up the first time then.
9 months.
Nine months.
I think it was the spring. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're probably right. There have been 3 times with
Any plans for evolving it at all? Are you just going
to
keep it?
No, I will try to have this for a long run. I am the reckless type, but I'm feeling pretty comfortable that this will be my longest gig.
Yeah, I love the idea of having one large aquarium which is long term, because it's so expensive and it's such hard work to redo it from scratch.
Exactly.
And then you can run, you like me, you've got smaller aquariums that you can kind of turn over more frequently. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think that would be my run on it.
Mm. And you got some lilies today?
Yes, that's for new Central West African Bantu.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Central West Africa.
Some kind of.
So is that like Congo?
No, more Liberia, Ivory Coast, so probably West Africa.
Okay. Yeah. I've never been to Africa, have you?
Yeah, I've been to Zambia, Zimbabwe.
Ah. And holidays or work?
Yeah, Africa, with the school thing.
Okay.
When I was in ninth grade myself.
Oh, so you actually had school. You were school teacher.
Yeah, it could have been that, but it was my own time. So it's long way back. But I still remember it.
Good memories?
Yeah, I love Africa. It's such a...
What's the attraction to Africa?
It's just their take on everything with animals and nature is just bigger.
Right.
They have kind of... There's so much in them. All those animals you have seen just in
TV,
in TV and read about, they are just there and one walking around. So and then I started to deep dive into aquariums and found out that they have an abundance of aquatic life as well.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's really God was really giving them full attention when it came to animal,
Well, isn't Africa where all Earth kind of didn't Earth was basically Africa and Africa split up thousands of years ago, I guess.
The basic theory is that people kind of moved out from Africa, spread out. So it kind of makes sense that they were spoiled in any kind of sense. They had it all.
They did. But now we regard Africa as like one of the more sort of underdeveloped continents.
Yeah.
But although there are obviously countries that are doing very well.
Mm.
I have to admit my ignorance on, that kind of history. But I've never been to Africa and I think I'd like to go.
Mm.
I've never been to Australasia and I've never been to East Asia or Southeast Asia. So I've done North America, South America, Central America, Europe, all over Europe, obviously. We're quite near Norway. I'd like to go to North Norway to see the Northern Lights.
Yeah, we can see that actually around here.
Can you?
If you're lucky, not like the...
No, the Aurora.
National Geographic poster way, but more in a slider way, we can actually...
I'm trying to figure out what it is about these things that I'm drawn to, is it, I think it's just a feeling of awe, the feeling that we're really small and there's something out there so much bigger than us.
Yeah.
And when you actually get to witness it visually in that, that way, and my mind's drawn to the astronauts, every single astronaut that's gone to the moon and seen the Earth really small.
Yeah.
It's completely transformed their way of thinking about the planet and the creation and all of this, and I think that's really interesting. I heard a really, really fascinating diet interview, and I can't remember exactly his name. He was in it. He's a really famous astrophysicist. He's a black chap, really well known in social media circles. But he was saying there's a lot of kind of debate or a lot of kind of rhetoric around how so many millions, billions, trillions of dollars have been wasted on space travel.
Mm.
and you know, putting people, you know, putting man on the moon. But his argument was, it wasn't to put people on the moon, it was to make people aware of Earth.
Mm.
Because it wasn't until we saw photos of the Earth from the moon and we actually physically saw it as a globe,
mm.
where we're all on it together,
yeah.
that things actually on Earth started to change for the better. You know, there was a, you know, more environmentalism, you know, all of the nasty chemicals that were around in the 60s and 70s were banned, you know, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the stuff that we were really, really damaging the Earth and the humans with kind of stopped because people realised we are actually sharing this thing together. And you can argue, you know, there's lots of arguments about, you know, where we're going now, climate change and all the rest of it, but I just thought it was a really interesting concept of, you know, seeing the Earth as that thing that we're all on it together, because I think as humans we tend to think of ourselves as the centre of the universe and everything revolves around us,
yeah.
you know, we become self-centred and kind
yeah.
of...
That's a nasty habit.
Yeah, it is, and then it kind of links in with aquariums because, in essence, this is an underwater world, and you know, we're the creator of it, aren't we? And we have a responsibility, in my mind, to give it our attention in the best way that we possibly can.
Mm.
And I think this is a really great example of that. You know, the fish are really healthy, plants are healthy. And you're not injecting CO2 to do that. And my you know, my whole mindset around things like CO2 injection and, you know, heavy nutrient dosing and huge frequent water changes, huge amounts of energy that's required to keep this perceived idealism of like so-called perfection.
Mm.
It isn't perfection because you're forcing so many external factors onto it, you know, and actually it's almost feeding into that kind of consumerist thing that a lot of modern life is obsessed with, about consumerism and wanting the best, biggest, the shiniest, you know, the fastest growing, you know, the rarest thing, and something to be said for just letting things kind of grow at their own pace, in a more natural way, I'd say.
Yeah, I like the slow pace in this tank.
Yeah.
Not on the angels, but that slants.
that's another lesson though, isn't it? You can't, if you potentially keep in several species in here that may not coexist in nature. I mean, you've definitely got some live bearers, obviously.
Yeah, well, they're actually.
But they do, yeah, you know, they do come. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But there's always going to, in my mind, there's always going to be a less than perfect thing in any system. So yeah. if you see this as an overall system, there's going to be part of that system that isn't as strong as other parts of the system, you know. So what the typical motivation would be is to... You look at the angelfish, you know, oh, they're not growing so fast. What can I do to boost their growth? You could do several things. You could increase the temperature of the water, so the metabolic rate increases, and feed it more food, so it grows quicker. But then that could potentially have a detrimental impact on something else in there.
Yeah.
And maybe get more algae.
Mm.
And then some fish may prefer it a little bit cooler. Mm. So they might start to suffer. So I think it's they're feeding, aren't they? They're not struggling. They're not hiding away.
No.
So, you know, it's going back to that, just the slow pace and just let nature kind of take its course a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, and we need some slow pace sometimes.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, I used to think kind of happiness was based on excitement.
Mm.
But now I think happiness is based on peace and doing less and having less.
Yeah.
being content with less,
yeah.
not striving for more all the time.
Yeah, there was this quote I read some years ago, can't remember the guy behind it, but it was, do less but more thoroughly.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And do whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability, and with full attention, with minimal distraction, and that's so hard these days with social media and notifications.
Yeah.
I literally have no notifications on my phone apart from I think Facebook Messenger, and then a few select people on WhatsApp. And phone and text message. I think they're the only. I don't have any social media notifications at all. And I have a rule about not looking at my phone after 9 p.m. When I'm at home. Don't take my phone to bed with me. Don't even watch much TV after 8 or 9 p.m. Try to read a book or just chat with my wife. You know, and then stare in the fish tanks whilst I'm chatting. They're more distracting, actually, which is a good distraction, because it does make you feel more peaceful.
Yeah,
you know?
And we need to train our brain to work in slow motion sometimes. And reading and tanks, they are brilliant examples of that.
Yeah.
So.
They are, aren't they? And even maintenance now, I deliberately try to take my time doing the maintenance. I used to rush it.
Yeah.
But it's part of the process. And the process is the thing. It's not the end goal. The end goal is fleeting. It's just an instant thing. It's just like one moment in time. The process is forever. And if you can enjoy the process, I think that's where the happiness is. I remember writing my book, and then I regret not leaning into the process of that more, you know. I crammed it all. I had a deadline and I just crammed it all at the end. And then when I got the book delivered and I had the first, you know, I got the first copy and I opened it, I was disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. I've never told anyone this before. I'm just being honest, mate. Yeah. But this is my rule. I'm going to just be truthful from that one. You know, try not to overshare too much. But I was disappointed. And then, and it's the classic thing of, I set myself up for, like, when I've got this book in my hand, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
But number one, I rushed it, and like I said, I crammed it at the end. That's the classic ADHD thing, and I wasn't diagnosed at the time, so it all makes sense now. And if and when I do another book, I am just going to say lean into that process. I'm going to take as long as I need, and I'm going to go to the publisher with the finished item. It doesn't matter if it's in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
It's just going to be like the best book that I've ever, you know, I'm just going to be so proud of it because of the process and not because I've just looked forward to having this book in my hand. Because, you know, I mean, I do like the book and it is useful and there's so much great feedback off it. But I knew I could do much better.
But, well, that is kind of how we are as humans, isn't it? We always have these. When I get to this point, then I'll be happy.
Goal driven.
Yeah, if I get to there, then I'll be happy.
When I earn this amount of money, when I've got this size house, when I've got this car.
Yeah.
Fell into this trap recently. Emma, she's got a good job, and they do a car scheme. And so she basically chooses pretty much any car she wants, and they take it directly out of her wages. So, obviously, you know, costs, you know, dependent and not be sensible, but I've always fancied a Tesla. And so I just got so excited.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to get a Tesla after all. You know, I've been running a Tesla for years, you know. It used to be a Porsche 911. Now I'm a bit more sensible. It's a Tesla.
Yeah.
And then I just caught myself thinking, like, it's just an object of desire.
Yeah,
And it's not going to actually make me any happier, you know. And you can justify, it's really fast, it's going to make me excited. But going back to the, you know, happiness isn't excitement. It's I'd actually be, I think I talked about this in a car, I'd actually be happier with no car, almost no technology, and living in a small holding in the middle of nowhere with my own animals, my own crops, you know, and almost self-sustaining, you know, almost hunter-gatherer in a way. I'm going off on a tangent. But maybe, you know, maybe that, I mean, sort of jokes, you know, my name's Farmer, but maybe something in that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's maybe why I love growing plants so much, because deep down I'm a farmer. But yeah, they're so special, aren't they? Like these little glass boxes with nature inside of them.
Yeah.
What is it that you keep in aquariums as a child?
Yeah, we had some. I remember in my childhood, but not really, not for a really long time. I had a turtle as well, but then I got a tank as an 18-year-old for a present for my wife.
Yeah.
I don't think she quite knew what she was giving me. but I had that tank going up and down and in and out, and had some fish dying out from it.
Yeah.
Had various luck with that tank, because they always cut corners and skipped the process.
Okay.
Always, didn't really did it after the book, you can say.
Okay.
Yeah, but then eventually, when I was about 10 years ago or something, I got to a point where I was thinking, now I want to do this the whole way. I don't want to skip any corners, I don't want to rush anything. And then I went to a library and I got all the books for aquariums and just read them. And then I got the basics.
Yeah.
And then I did down into Malawi cichlids and had that for years.
Okay.
Yeah. And evolved from there.
When you got your Malawi cichlids?
Old?
Yeah.
My kids were...
So you're an adult at this point? Adult?
Yeah. I think it's about 10 years ago when Rosa was about being born.
Okay.
I had my first. So it's not that long ago.
No?
No. Not really. So, yeah, and then I had my always like for some years.
What size tank was that?
I had a few starting out with 190 liters, and then I had 325 and ended up with a 500 liters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a good mix of Malawis, or were you going quite by a type?
I was all into Embunas, Embunas.
Yeah.
I did a lot of different types. So, and then I learned that for some years, and sometimes when you're doing Malawis, it's kind of when you're... that's the only thing you. There's nothing else in the world.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, you get quite not single-minded, but
yeah, kind of gets a little bit like
blinkered.
It's a bit like people having MacBooks and iPhones. You know.
All right. I can
get a bit.
ADA.
Yeah.
But
that's
really interesting.
But that's okay. But then, I suddenly one day started thinking perhaps I should try some other continents, some other fish.
Yeah.
And it, ran off from there.
Yeah. Interesting. I've got a thing for Tanganyikans. Yeah, I was really inspired by your Tanganyika setup. But I've got some catfish, they're like, the nickname is Cuckoo, they're like a Cynodontis,
yeah.
Persicola, is it, something like that?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, spots on them.
Yeah, I know them.
But since I've put them in since I planted the, my room divider tank, they hide.
Okay.
All the time. I very rarely, they do come out and they feed, but they don't come out as much as they used to. and I don't know why. And I don't know if it's because the fish are getting so big and boisterous that I'm scaring them off, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they're Tanganyika.
Yeah, many plinkers tend to be night active, but I don't know what this inodontis.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I've got two black eyes. It's a real, you know, yes, obviously black eye, these bristle eyes are South American, the Sinodontis, so the Tanganyika, and then the Chindongo is Salusi is Malawi. But I need to give some fish away soon. They're getting so big and they're overpopulated. I've got two Biomaster 850s on there.
Wow, but they get quite big with time.
The biggest males are like this long, and they're really chunky. Yeah. They're really like fat.
Yeah, they also kind of lose their colours when they get too chunky. Too much bread with too little butter, so they get stretched out.
Yeah, I've never thought of it like that. But I'd say going to the opposite end of the spectrum, I've got these tiny little Rasboras in my Yagumi. I can't remember the name of them. Chili Rasboras is the name.
Yeah.
I can't remember. My brain, it's been a long day. Remember the Latin name?
No.
It'll come to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're beautiful. But I've only got three, so I need a load more. I think I'll get 20 in there. 20 in my 60 centimetre. It'll be a nice little shot.
Yeah.
But that Iwagumi is sweet. I was sort of a little bit reluctant to do an Iwagumi because, you know, they're not very kind of fish friendly, you know, typically, because they're minimalist. But this has got like loads of pearl weed, you know, the Micranthemoides, or Hemianthus Micranthemoides. I don't have really high turnover. I don't actually inject high levels of CO2 in there.
No.
I actually run the lights quite relatively low.
Mm.
And then I've got the backlight on it. And actually, when you've got relatively low light over the top and then the backlight, it's actually a really nice balance.
Yeah.
And for photography, it's really good.
It's good.
Yeah, so. If I get opportunity, I'll overlay some footage of it on this video because it is looking really nice. And I'm wondering how long I can keep it going for because the pearl weed just responds so well to trimming. And you can just keep hacking that back and it just keeps coming back. What is it about cichlids? They're so intelligent, aren't they? Compared to other fish.
I've always been attracted to cichlids. They kind of have that
character.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's a good way of describing it.
Like, more intelligent, more purposeful.
Yeah.
You look at a guppy, it's almost random, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like random knife.
Exactly.
It's got no purpose. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that for? Yeah. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
You ask a cichlid, he's like, oh, I'm defending my little territory, thanks.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go and have my way with this female.
Yeah.
And then you can't get anywhere near it, mate.
Yeah, I think some of the best experiments I had with fish were after a long period with Malawi cichlids and you know their behavior of having fry that's kind of non-existing, you know, they just spat it out and they'll just eat it. So after a period of that I had Central American cichlids, you know, with their extremely careful fry behavior.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, sometimes they stay together as a pair, and sometimes they'll just move, and they'll protect the eggs together, the male and the female. And when they hatch and have like these small fish, they'll just sometimes patrolling them around in the tank, you know, pushing them, and the male keeping all the other fish away, and females pushing the fry out in the tank. It's just amazing looking into it. And after keeping fish for a long time, just seeing them eating their own fry, that's kind of, you think, this fish got an extra gear. It's,
yeah.
I think that's why I like cichlids.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is that where we're kind of projecting our own like humanity onto these things? So the more like a human they are, the better.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easier to relate to.
Anthropomorphizing.
Yeah, it's easier to, for us to relate to, you know, it's very, it's so difficult for us to relate to the fact that fish just keep on reproducing fry that they're just eating themselves. That's kind of...
Yeah, they're eating themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, that's kind of weird in a way for a human.
Yeah, to we've got a natural aversion to the thought of cannibalism, haven't we?
Hmm.
And it's kind of like one of the darkest sort of acts, isn't it? Eating another human.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Considered,
yeah.
Yeah. And that must be... Okay, is that cultural? Or is it like an actual, like, fundamental biological thing in us, do you think?
I don't know, actually. Because there were always, like, these... In
kind of basic tribes, aren't there?
I mostly think that was actually kind of... You know, Western colonialism, you know, bringing back the stories of tribes that were so evil and primitive that they would eat each other. So I actually think that I read once that most of those cannibalistic stories were actually just
stories.
Yeah, just stories, because
fables.
On the long term, it's kind of a bad way of you know, living, to eat each other. It's kind of a weird strategy to exist.
Yeah.
Eating your own tribe, it's kind of a short-term way of living.
It is, isn't it? But then you look at the perceived evil of, you know, certain, you know, leaders, like genocide and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I wonder where that stems from.
Yeah, yeah, that's weird.
It is weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to fish. but yeah, the kind of attraction to a species of fish that's more intelligent, that does make sense.
Mm.
And do you develop an emotional connection with any fish, or do you just see them as something that you care for deeply and you want to give them your best?
Yeah, I've never really had emotional connections. I've never...
What, in general, in life?
Only with...
If you've got a wife and children, how much will they love you?
That's boring. I've never cried my whole life. No, only related to fish. I think I'm finding it hard to relate to people acting to their dogs, for example, like others act to their kids.
We're gonna fall out.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm touching you. So, to be careful now.
Yeah.
But so I don't think for me it's actually kind of I don't have relations like that. So I do care for them and I like. But yeah.
Why do you care for them?
Yeah, because I think I'm taking on the responsibility and I'm putting him in there and wanting to... I think that I just actually want them to have it the most natural way possible. And sometimes, you know, nature is cruel as well. So I would never, you know, removing fish if they got eaten. And I'm not really having any problems that my neanderthals got eaten when they were small, because that is kind of part of nature. That's how nature works. So, and I'm not crying if my cichlids are eating the fry in the end. So that's also kind of nature, you know. So I want them to have the closest environment to nature possible.
It's interesting, isn't it? It seems like there's a spectrum of how much you care about something depending on how more like a human it is.
Mm.
So for instance, I've got no issues with crushing a snail and feeding it to the fish.
Yeah, me too.
But going to a level beyond that, I feel really bad if a shrimp gets stuck on the inlet of the filter. I feel quite bad about that. But then I will pick it off and crush it and feed it to the fish.
Yeah.
But if I had a dead fish in there, I wouldn't crush that up and feed it to the other fish.
No.
Why?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Question, yeah.
So there's a line, isn't there?
Yeah.
But then, like, going back to the dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely love my dog. I'm going to have to defend myself now because I'm so, I am emotionally involved with my dogs. They're Tommy and Betty, you know, we've named them, obviously. So by naming them like human names, that automatically you have that relation, you know, that association that they're a living thing that's got an individual character. But you can see some of the, especially the siblings have individual characters, but you don't name them.
No.
So, but my dogs have individual, very distinct personalities, and they do stuff for you.
Yeah.
You know? So they serve us, and they serve us in a practical way.
Mm.
You know, whereas I guess fish serve you in a practical way in terms of they make you feel more chilled.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But a dog is just. I don't know. I have a vibe with cats and dogs and horses. I think any animal and fish, that any living thing, I just have a vibe with that. I feel like we're all living things are connected.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think the more you open up yourself to that. The more you allow yourself to open up to the possibility that we're all connected like that, the more it happens. So whenever I'm in a home and they've got a cat, they make a beeline for me. They will come and sit on my lap or jump on my shoulder and make weird noises. I was at a graveyard the other day. And I sat on the bench, and I just felt this urge. I was going for a bike ride, and I saw this graveyard, and I thought, well, this is quite chill. I sat under this tree, this bench, sat there. This cat comes out of the middle of nowhere, and literally runs up to me, pounces on me, and then just wraps itself around my neck and starts purring. Seriously. And I'm like, all right, mate.
But isn't that just the cat's nature, you know?
They're
truthless, they would just...
But when I go to her home, they go, sorry about the cats are really sketchy, the cat hates other people, sorry about the cat. And then I'll sit there, and then the cat comes over and just starts like lying on me and purring and stuff. And I don't know if it's like a hereditary thing, because my dad had his issues, and he was actually quite a challenging man to live with. And he didn't have many friends, and you know, he was a bit of a bully, but he had a way of animals, and he had no fear of animals, and I think I kind of got that from him, you know. And he went from the army and he joined the RSPCA, which is the animal welfare charity in the UK, and he was like a high flyer, and he got promoted super quickly, really high rank. And so I think there's something, I don't know, I think some people are just more in tune, you know, of animals and stuff. And they're kind of, it's really kind of paradoxical, because when I got into fish keeping and fish tanks, I didn't really see the fish as a living creature. I saw them as an ornament. And I just saw them as something to serve me, as something beautiful to look at. You know, and I was obsessed about growing the plants and creating the most beautiful aquarium I could. And the fish were there almost to serve just aesthetic purpose rather than a living entity that's within your care, and you have a responsibility to give it the best care that you could. And that, I feel a bit, you know, I do feel a bit guilty actually, because I probably killed a few fish without realising, you know, too much CO2. Or the fish didn't suit the tank, so I, you know, take them back to the shop. You know, this didn't suit it, not because I didn't live it, because I just didn't like the way they looked. That's not good. That's not living in keeping with other animals. But now I totally get it, And I think this aquarium reflects that kind of respect that you're giving the animals and the plants at the same time. And you're letting things go at its own pace.
Mm.
So you're living in line with nature, living in accordance with nature, rather than trying to control nature to conform to your own sense of ideal, you know?
Mm.
And I think that's the way forward with aquarium keeping. Yeah.
I do like those. They're okay.
Just dogs?
Like, yeah, dogs, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right, you've upset me, to be fair.
just to the point where people, you know, share an ice cream with them.
Oh, no, that's a bit weird.
That's where I do it. That's where my limit is. So
yeah, that's a bit weird. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit guilty of. I do give them little scraps.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I know why because I like to feel needed by them.
Mm.
You know, and actually. And we could go really deep into psychology and childhood attachment styles and all this, but I just love the fact that they're like, I know that they want me,
yeah,
they need me, and I love that.
Isn't that kind of the biggest asset for a dog?
What's that? That
they make you feel needed,
yeah.
and loved.
It's companionship.
Yeah.
And humans crave that. Most humans crave companionship or some kind of connection.
They even made Hitler feel needed and wanted and loved, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could go deep on Hitler if you wanted, but I don't think it's that kind of podcast. And I know you like your history. Yeah. Are you a history teacher?
Yeah, I am. So, I mean, just needed to bring him on. That's something I have in every...
Every podcast.
Yeah, I want to mention Hitler.
Have you seen the Netflix series about him, the secret sex life of Hitler?
No.
It's got to be written by a Jewish producer, because it absolutely destroys him on every level, which is fine, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And no one can defend him. People can defend him. There are obviously a lot of people that... Anyway, we don't need to go down that road. But honestly, it was so fascinating. And it was during the period that I had really bad insomnia, and they did nothing good about my insomnia, to be fair, but I'd wake up at like 1 or 2 in the morning, and I think I'll let Emma stay in bed. I'll go downstairs and watch Netflix. I'd get the darkest, craziest series on I could, and just watch that. And one of them was The Secret Sex Life of Hitler, and it was pretty dark. I'm just gonna say that.
See what? I'm gonna let him go in over me and those guys. What? Ik meer in over.
Just for the record, that's that's David's middle son, middle child, desperate for attention.
Don't think you quite understand what we're doing.
No, we're just doing a good old chat. David and his mate are in a chat about the fish tank. I'm not sure there's a camera there, or whether they're wearing microphones. That's funny. Probably a good distraction from the Hitler chat.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll call the title of this video Two Fish Geeks Talk Hitler. Something like that.
Gubbies and Hitler.
Gubbies and Hitler.
The secret gubby life of Hitler. Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the human race is pretty diverse. Fish keeping can be a reflection of that. Yeah. I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of styles to achieve success.
Yeah.
And there's I think there are wrong ways to do it, and there are right ways to do it, but there's so much in between that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think it all comes down to awareness.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm hoping that podcasts and videos like this, and what you do on your own social media, you know, and Ty does, and Dave, you know, and all the people that we know and respect in the industry and the hobby, will help to serve something important, I think. Because I think aquariums, you know, do have the potential to get so many important lessons across. across, especially to kids, children. We were talking about this earlier, you know, you're a school teacher. I'm hopefully going to be working with some schools, you know, doing some aquarium work with them. And, you know, the idea of using an aquarium to get so many important lessons across to kids, you know, anything from that sense of responsibility to a living thing, to the fundamental interconnectedness of the light, the plants, the fish, you know, the bacteria, the shrimps, the importance of regular maintenance, you know, the meditative aspect of maintaining an aquarium, you know, or just sitting there looking at an aquarium and not scrolling on TikTok.
Yeah.
You know, these are all really interesting and important lessons I think kids can learn from. And from someone who now I'm aware of my own kind of neurodivergent issues, ADHD, inattentive type, you know, I know there's so many other children out there which don't, which are in a traditional school system that don't enjoy learning the way that they're being taught. And if you don't enjoy the way you're being taught, you're not going to learn it so well. And but I know that if I sat down with, you know, a certain type of kid with this aquarium here right now, I could get across to them so many like really important kind of skills, lessons, and you know, educational value from this one thing. And they just get it.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't need to like read a textbook just for the black and white words and like rubbish photos to understand, you know, what Kelvin is in a light bulb. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I vote for having aquascaping and plant aquariums in all schools. Do you vote for that too?
Yeah, it would be good.
I think we should start a petition.
Yeah.
A worldwide petition.
Yeah.
Plant aquariums for schools.
Yeah.
I think we'll end it there, mate. Thanks again. This is the second time we've recorded this, so even more diverse than the first time.
Yeah, with us.
Yeah. We're going to be an interesting edit, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
You're going to give me a lift home in the snow now.
Yeah, hopefully. Otherwise, we'll take four.
Hopefully, yeah. Otherwise, we'll just get a sleeping bag down there and make more videos.
Just keep going on, mate.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. It was awesome.